This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out, me and more, breathe in, breathe out, never mind, it was time, number nine, number lies, feline.
We begin hour two with a callback to what we were talking about in hour one. We'll get to the Astro that did say we would do that, but we got a call. And I mentioned this during our discussion, or maybe my monologue, about Cowboys, and excuse me, not Cowboys, but this guy's a Cowboy fan is calling in, but about the Eagles and Giants and the tush push, the four consecutive times the Eagles ran it on one drive to eventually score a touchdown. Eric wants to talk about it. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, people don't like the tush push. Yeah, it should be gone. But every time they do the tush push, it's a false start and the refs never call it. That's why people want it gone. But it sucks. Also, yesterday y'all were talking about the Astros might trade Yonner for a pitcher, maybe Christian Walker. On one of the fan boards on the Instagram, somebody mentioned that, and people acted like, you know, they shot their dog. They're all upset about it. Your thoughts on this? I'll hang up the listen.
I hope people don't take the thought of trading Yonner to that level. It was just a question with the logjam of infielders and Yonner not being a particularly good catcher defensively, what could the Astros do? And I think trading Yonner is least likely. If they were trading someone, it probably would be Christian Walker. But, yeah, this was also something brought up by Brian McTaggart, that could Yonner be someone they move and bring back Caratini because of his switch hitting ability and he's a better defensive catcher. It's simply early in the offseason. I don't know that there's any real consideration to trading Yonder Diaz. It's just something to talk about. But as far as the tush push, sure, people don't like it, but it's less to do with the penalties. That is something you can pick at, so there's a reasonable discussion about taking it away, because it feels like you're just soft if you say you don't like it because the Eagles are really good at it. So when you throw in the added, I won't say it's always a fact, but we have seen it several times, when you throw in the added penalty aspect of it, then there should be a real consideration, because if it cannot be refereed properly because of the how the play works, then maybe it needs to go. I am not leaning towards getting rid of it simply because it's bad aesthetically. I don't like watching the tush push, mostly because it feels so automatic. I would like to have a little unpredictability when it comes to a play. I don't want to know what's going to happen before it happens. The tush push, it just feels like if the Eagles line up in it, it's going to work. They have, and they also now do variations where they trick you into thinking they're going to run the tush push, and maybe they'll run outside, or now I think they even like underhand the ball to Goddard on the outside when you are too focused on it. So they have tried things to make people less likely to defend it. But if referees can't call the false starts that seem very obvious, then I think it should go. But if they could, that would make it less effective because the Eagles wouldn't get off to the head start that they do. And then if they did, they get penalized for it. But they don't even get that. So that's why the play is a problem to me, not just because the Eagles are good at it. and I don't play them twice a year, so it's not as bothersome to me as it would be to a Cowboy, Commander, or Giants fan. So I get all that. The Texans haven't even played the Eagles since the tush push was a thing, right? And then, so we haven't had to deal with it in the city, from what I remember. So, yeah, it's sensitive to the Cowboy fan who called, and anyone else has to deal with them more consistently than we do. All right, thank you for the call, Eric. Of course, the number is 713-780-3776 if you want to follow him. All right, if you missed it, the Astros got rid of several members of their staff, three coaches and two and a general manager, and then also a trainer as well. Now, excuse me, assistant general manager. Dana Brown is still here. The assistant general manager was over medical player development, so if you saw what happened last year at this team, you might think that guy deserved to go. Michael Collins left. Troy Snicker is gone, and Alex Cintron is gone. Both hitting coaches, and Michael Collins is the catching coach. Jeremiah Randall, the head athletic trainer, also went. I don't have a defense for any of them and why they should stay. Mostly because while you can say the players could be fragile, I don't think their Astros did a very good job with their return to play mechanism. So whoever's responsible for that should have had their job evaluated. That's all. The hitting coach stuff, we can see that game to game, year over year. Their approach to at-bats, the lack of productivity, those things you can evaluate even just as a fan and say, okay, that's not good. Somebody has to answer for why that is. Now, of course, it's now the Astros' responsibility to fix all that. And I do wonder if they'll just clean house with the training staff. I don't know how that works. If the head trainer is hired individually and then people under him are as well, because it's a different sport and a different kind of part of that sport altogether. But we saw with the Texans, they fired their O-line coach and kept the guy under him. So it may be something where the Astros believe the head athletic trainer and the assistant GM over medical player development are the big problems, and the guys and ladies who are a part of the team aren't really an issue. But they had to change leadership. So that's what they've done. What's next? They got to hire the right people, and that'll be by a combination of people. Dana Brown will be involved. I'm sure Jim Crane will have his say as well. So if you want changes, you got them. Maybe you're hoping that it would be Espada and Dana Brown at the top, but those guys are certainly, I won't say under fire, but they got a year left on their deal, and I don't suspect that an extension is coming for either one of them unless the season start going back in the direction the Astros want, because we all know, you go from 2022 World Series champion to 2023 ALCS participant to 2024, wild card round participant to 2025, not even making the playoffs. That happens to every team who's been good for a very long time, and we certainly credit the Astros for staying in it. But if you want to reverse the trend, you have to start somewhere. So you get rid of some people you think aren't up to snuff, and now, besides hiring them, you gotta fix this rotation. That's job one for Dana Brown. The hitters have enough of a history, at least from the guys we expect to be back, that you would think maybe, even if it's not even on the pitching coach or hitting coach, but an off year. Yordan, his start to the season wasn't one we liked, and then he got hurt. So Yordan just threw away his year. Christian Walker has been a good hitter, and he wound up leading the team in home runs and RBIs, but it wasn't the type of year we wanted to see from him. Of course, Paredes had a lengthy injury as well. So you didn't have Correa for the whole year. Pena was banged up. You can imagine this lineup finding its way back to form and being one of the better lineups in baseball. You need help with the other part of the team, and that's the pitching, and that's Dana Brown's mandate. He said it himself. I got to go get pitching, whether through free agency or a trade. And it might be a combination of both. All right. I see a couple people have called in. We're going to go to break. Hold on, Noah. Hold on, Wayne. You want to talk Astros and A&M. We'll get to you when we come back. Just hold on. We'll get to you. Anyone else, we'll get to you as well. 713-780-3776. We will be back with some A&M talk and some Astro talk. Join us.
ESPN 97.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9, here's Del Olalea.
I'm at East River 9. I'll be out here for another 40 minutes or so. Jeremy and Joe will start their show here at 3, so still got plenty of time to get out here. Take advantage of the promo table. We're giving away shirts, a lot of them. And if you love a koozie, we got those for you too. So head on out here, stop in, get your shirt, then head on out onto the course at East River 9. But let's get to a couple callers. Let's get to Noah. He wants to talk some A&M, and then we'll get to Wayne. What's up, Noah?
Hey, what's up, Del? I just want to talk about how A&M is going to beat the hell out of Florida this weekend. And they're not getting talked about enough, you know. We got Cassius Howell, Mo Saxons, Von Miller, generational talent. And, you know, these running backs for A&M, Le'Veon Moss and Reuben Owens, these guys are legit. And I think A&M's about to come out, beat the hell out of Florida. And I also think Texas is going to lose this weekend. You know, I don't know why they're being favored. They haven't shown anything to me all season, so...
Appreciate it, Noah. Yeah, Cassius Howell, he had 3 sacks against Mississippi State. He gets him in bunches, now at 7 on the season. The Von Miller thing, you're talking about a Hall of Famer. We'll see. Yes, Cassius Howell is off to a good start. This is his second year at A&M. He spent a couple years at Bowling Green. As far as your running backs, yeah, I talked about it earlier, how Reuben Owens filled in for Le'Veon Moss. Apparently he had stomach issues. We'll just call it bubble guts. I'm not sure what the issues were. The undisclosed stomach issues, because when you're in college, you don't really need to have your information out there, just how it's kind of handled. But Elko talked about that earlier in the week and said he's pretty much over it, and that was earlier in the week, so I would expect that duo to be back at it. A&M's got threats everywhere, at running back, at receiver. They did a good job in the transfer portal. Yeah, they should be talked about. They're a top-5 team. They've got the win over Notre Dame, and Notre Dame will likely, considering how their schedule is playing out, wind up as a top 15, top 10 team, and maybe be 10-2. So that win's going to look better for the Aggies as they go along. But look, Notre Dame aside, the rest of the SEC schedule will determine, and they have enough, will determine how they finish, and they've got enough teams left on the schedule where, as they're undefeated right now, they can drop a couple. As long as they're the right couple. Like, you know, Florida, that's a game you should win. Arkansas is not a good football team. You go to LSU, you go to Missouri. If you split that one, considering if you beat Florida, you split the LSU-Missouri double. You could, now, you know what, looking at it, you got to go to Austin. But other than that, you got a real shot to be 11-1 and certainly in the mix to wind up in Atlanta. So we saw this from the A&M team last year where they were in it to get to the SEC title game until the final week. And, of course, they lost to Florida in Kyle Field as that rivalry returned. So it may be – excuse me, lost to Texas at Kyle Field as the Texas A&M game returned. So they're in the same – they may be in that same spot and possibly even in a better position if they're undefeated or only with the one loss. So, yeah, they should be talked about. Top five team in the country. They just have kind of been off – the radar a little bit because even their SEC opponents are fundamentally flawed and maybe fundamentally fraud as well. Auburn and Mississippi State weren't thought to be great teams coming in, and you handle them, and maybe A&M won't get the credit they deserve until they head into Death Valley. And if they win that game, then there should be no questions about them because at that point they'd be 8-0. As far as your thoughts on Texas and OU, Texas is the favorite thing is just a power ratings thing. At least part of it is. And, of course, Vegas will set a line to get the bets they want. But, look, Texas is a talented football team. Their offensive line is worse than people thought. You just assume, considering what they had been the last couple of years under Sark, that the O-line would be good. It's not very good. And Oklahoma has a defensive front to challenge them quite a bit. I guess the other side of it is Texas – outside of what you saw against Florida, where they gave up some big plays, it's a good defensive team, too. And is John Mateer healthy? Is that OU offensive line, which isn't that good, going to be able to keep Texas away from John Mateer if he does play. And if he doesn't, then you got a Michael Hawkins. A Michael Hawkins that isn't great. Let me put it that way. So I think that's some of it. You're not quite sure, although Mateer is now considered probable. But is he going to be a guy who is protecting that hand and isn't running very much? Because that OU offense has not been effective as just a straight drop-back passing team. Mateer has to create with his legs and extend plays, and if he's not doing that, then I'm not sure Oklahoma's going to hit big plays or even have sustained offense. But, of course, it's Red River, and predicting anything about Red River seems pretty silly. We've all seen what happens in those games. The under would seem likely, but Red River doesn't generally produce games where the score is under the total. So I get why you say you think A&M's going to win. Texas is going to lose. I'm not sure I'm there with you right now. I go back and forth the fourth in that game, and I've done it a couple times today. Let's get to Wayne. He wants to talk some Astros. Certainly the Astros have done a lot and probably have a lot more to do in the offseason. What's up, Wayne?
Not much. How things going on? I just want to talk about the incompetence with a lot of the individuals that seem to be working for the Astros. And what I mean by that is that the farm system is there's nothing there, basically. That's where you build your teams for the future. And when they get these young players and they bring them up, the ones that have potential, I just don't understand why the Astros don't lengthen their contracts where they have them for a longer period of time. And it seems like the scouts and how they draft players or look for players is like, I don't know what they're looking for, but it's not like they're looking for the players that the Astros need that they're going to be there for a long time. The medical staff was horrible, of course, and obviously the hitting people, the hitting coaches needed to go. Now, I've seen the Astros when they get up there, there's a lot of impatience. They were always in a hurry to swing at anything. Seeing a lot of strikeouts. There's just a lot of issues going on with the Astros, and it was really frustrating and disappointing to watch them play. And then the medical staff, you don't have to talk about that. All the injuries and everything that occurred. And I personally would trade Walker away. He was like one of the first ones to go. Sanchez is another one would probably be gone as well. And I'm not really sold on that the guy that got from the Cubs, a young player. He did all right his first month, and after that he disappeared. I'll probably keep him around a little bit longer, see what he's all about. But that young kid, Cole, they brought up, he has a lot of potential. He's a left-handed bat. He's got power, but he's not patient at the plate. That's one of the players I would think they would work on as far as his batting discipline. Because he's got the power, he's got speed, he's still young. Why won't the Astros throw a long contract for someone like that? He's looking for a left-handed bat. You're looking for youth, that seemed like a positive direction to go, and you're trying to build the future of your team. And the pitching, oh my God. The only one you really got is Hunter. And then Bruval, he has potential, and Josh Alexander. Then you got your reliever, Heading. He seems pretty decent, but other than that, you don't have nothing in pitching. Everything else needs to go or move around. They need to actually bring pitchers in or start developing pitchers that can actually play for the Astros for a longer time than six innings or not even get up to the mound and throw a ball. The Astros season was basically over with. And unfortunately, it took a lot of players from AAA and AA to at least give them a chance, and that's only going to last for so long. I just want your opinion, see what you think.
Appreciate it, Wayne. Thank you for the call and your thoughts. I've always thought, just because you watch the history of sports and teams who have these long type of runs, slippage happens. And the Astros' moves yesterday are trying to fix that. Whether it be talent or people in your organization as far as staff, because you're so successful, you're going to lose guys to different places. And can you continually replace them with competent to superb people? And you would probably say the last couple of years, the Astros haven't been able to do that. And you talked about their farm system. And when we're judging farm systems, for the most part, we're talking about top prospects. Look, the Astros have found ways to supplement guys who've gotten hurt. And you kind of talked about that. And hell, at some point, the Space Cowboys were the biggest factor for why the Astros are still winning ball games, still at the ALS. But they weren't. These aren't the guys that would be part of a long term future. You mentioned Zach Cole; he's already 25. You hope what you saw in flashes from him in his limited opportunities is something you'll see next year. You mentioned Cam Smith; that was a bet they took that for the most part did not work. You put a guy who hit the ball so well in spring training that you felt like you had no other choice but to make him your starting right fielder. And he had his moments, but he was 22 years old. And he had a kind of a fast rise from playing at Florida State, being with the Cubs and then being traded, then all of a sudden being in right field on opening day for a perennial contender. And I think that rookie season kind of went how you might expect, unless he was going to be a phenom from the jump. So patience at the plate, something that fans have certainly had issues with, or lack thereof, patience at the plate. And maybe two hitting coaches couldn't impart that on this team, and they'll find a way with whoever they hire next to make that more of a point of emphasis, working the count, becoming a team who's more patient and hard to pitch against, because we know they got guys who are very talented. If you add the aspect of being hard to pitch against, like Paredes was a guy who got praised quite a bit for that, then you certainly make the job tougher for the opponent. We talked about it quite a bit. The pitching needs to be fixed, and it has to be the primary goal for this team if they want to get back. And it's weird to say, it's only been a year that they don't make the postseason, but the city has had a decade of being used to making the postseason. So when you're out of it, and you're watching the Mariners go to a Game 5 tonight, you're watching the Blue Jays take out the Yankees, of course the Dodgers remain the Dodgers, you think you should be part of that. And that's what yesterday was about, getting back to that. Now it'll be Dana Brown's job to do what it takes to build a roster that could compete. And if they could beat the A's last season, they're in the playoffs again. And you watch them as we were heading down the stretch and look at all the tie-breaking scenarios, they simply could not beat the best in the AL. I'm not throwing the A's in that, but even with not being able to win a season series against the Guardians or the Tigers or the Red Sox, if you could have taken care of your business and not let Nick Kurtz have his way with you, then you're in the playoffs anyway. Didn't happen. First of likely many changes happened yesterday. I'm not going to say you're going to see a whole different team, because that's just an impossibility. But you're going to see hopefully impactful players, particularly in that rotation. And Dana Brown has once again talked about adding a left-handed bat, something Jesus Sanchez could not be in any consistent way in 2025. All right, we'll go to break with that. And if you want to follow Wayne, you're more than welcome. 713-780-3776. We will lightly dive into movies and television in honor of Michael Carroll. We normally do that segment with him on Fridays at 11:30, but he's not here. But I did take a look at a couple trailers for some genre television on the streaming services. And one hit and one didn't, and we'll get into that when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9. Here's Del Olalea.
So no Michael here with us, but as far as movies and television, plenty to take a look at. You know, Him is already out for on demand.
Really?
Yes. It's already out for you to watch. That's how poorly it went for the movie in the box office. You can watch Him right now on demand. It's available for rent or purchase right now. Like, so if you have whatever, if you got a smart TV and you turn it on, you're gonna be able to rent or buy Him. I'm not doing either. I will wait. If I ever do see the movie, it will be from a streaming service I already own. I'm not paying the extra $19 to rent it, or actually $19.99, or $25 to buy. I'm out on that. I'm good. Weapons is out this week, too. If you want to stream Weapons, rent or buy Weapons, you can do that as well. That one went better than Him in the box office, and apparently the creator does have a prequel in mind for the villain of that movie. Don't know if I'm looking for that, but it's there for you. I Know What You Did Last Summer, the 2025 version is out to rent or buy. So a lot of movies that at least had big promotional budgets are out there for you to watch. The quality of them is a different story altogether. So there that is. And of course, you can still rent or buy Fantastic Four First Steps. Did that come out this week, or has that been out? Either way, that's out there for you. So those are some of the things if you want to add a couple extra bucks for a home watching experience. And we'll get into some of the things that if you have Netflix or Apple, you can watch without paying extra. But I did see the trailer for The Witcher. If you don't know, the shakeup there is that Henry Cavill, who used to be our Superman, is no longer involved with the show. They went and got the other Hemsworth brother, Liam, probably best known beyond for being Miley Cyrus's fiance for a little bit, for being in the Hunger Games, the guy who didn't get picked in the Hunger Games, the other character did. He's in it, and I don't know how to describe it other than he's in the same type of clothes that that Henry Cavill's character had on, but it just looks like it's a poor. I was trying to explain it to Sean yesterday. My best way to explain what that trailer looks like, it looks like if it came out in the 90s and they did a poor job of it and someone who really loved the source material remade it now. But it looks like the 90s version of it, where everything looks a little off. Liam Hemsworth doesn't look like he's going to carry the Geralt character that like Henry Cavill did. He's wearing leathers, but instead of looking like brolic dude who kills monsters, I don't know how to describe it. It's just not right. I'm just put it that way. Maybe it's my bias because I had seen another actor in that role for multiple seasons. It don't look right. And apparently from the reading I've done, it's going to be focused on the Ciri character, which might be good for the show because I'm not sure I need to look at Liam Hemsworth as much as that trailer suggested. I'm out on that one. I watch it because I'm a completist, but I don't know. From first look, I think we got a miss there for the latest season of The Witcher. The other trailer was A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. If you don't know what that is a novella written by George R.R. Martin. It is in the Game of Thrones universe. It's set somewhere between the end of The House of the Dragon, however that series comes to an end, The Dance of the Dragons, I guess, is the name of the actual event, and then also the start of Game of Thrones, a series that popped off over a decade ago now. So it's set in between that. It's going to be like 30 minutes in episodes, and if you go by the tone of the trailer, it's maybe a little bit more comedic than we're used to. Some of the jokes did hit. It's about a knight without much acclaim, and he teams up with a kid who's hiding his identity because his identity is one of a royal. And I'm not giving anything else because if people who like to look up things, you're going to know how House of the Dragon ends by who this kid is. So I'm like, I'll avoid some of that. But yeah, that's out there. It's coming out in January. So if you need a little fix between the seasons of House of the Dragon, which I believe the next season comes out maybe in the summer, late summer. This one's coming out in January. So if you wanted to get more into the Game of Thrones world, that latest trailer is out, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I think it'll be like six or seven episodes at around 30-plus minutes apiece. So the trailer at least looked fun. We'll see how the series plays out. We had the call from Eric earlier. Now, this show's been out a while. It is part of the kind of the serial killer universe that Netflix is building, the Ed Gein show. I'm in. I don't particularly lock in on serial killer stuff, but this one looks interesting. I don't know much about the serial killer himself, I don't think he eats people, so unlike Dahmer. So I think I'll take a look at it. That was one of the reasons I didn't want to watch the Dahmer one. The eating of victims is a turnoff. So I didn't watch that one, but that one's out there too. That one's on Netflix, the Ed Gein one, that's getting pretty good reviews. It's part of their Monster series, and Monster, the Ed Gein stories. 8 episodes. It premiered last week. I think Michael talked about it, but since Eric brought it up, I wanted to bring it up again. And for the most part, getting pretty positive reviews about the real serial killer that Ed Gein was. And Charlie Hunnam's in it, the star of Sons of Anarchy. That's just a couple things to take a look at if you wanted to watch something this weekend as far as at home. The TV shows, excuse me, the movies in question, Tron: Ares is out. If you listened to the show last week, he gave away tickets to that. Jeff Bridges is in it. Of course, he's from the first Tron. Jared Leto is in it, known as Morbius from the Sony Marvel universe. Got a couple other people you would recognize, like Greta Lee. She's been in a couple of things you would know. Not getting great reviews. It's middle. It's like Rotten Tomatoes is giving it 54%. It, like Tron, the first one back in the 80s, a lot of people loved it. The most recent one, Tron Legacy, was another mixed review type of deal where some people liked it, some people didn't, but it wasn't killer. That's why it came out in 2010. They had plans to make a lot more of these, at least more quickly than they had. They had to wait 15 years because that's how Tron Legacy played out. Not enough people loved it, and I feel like this one's going to go that same way, right in that 50% range for Rotten Tomatoes. So that's the big one in theaters. Of course, you can still go watch the Leo movie. That one, people like still. And Roofman's out as well. That is the Channing Tatum, Kirsten Dunst movie. And I think it has Peter Dinklage in it. I think we talked about it, maybe not. But Kirsten Dunst and Channing Tatum in Roofman. And it sounds exactly, actually, it does have a guy on a roof, but he doesn't fix roofs. He just lived in a roof, and after he escaped from prison, he just secretly lived inside of Toys R Us for like 6 months, and no one knew that he was there. And of course, the romance is he falls for Kirsten Dunst, who happens to work there. So if you want to see Channing Tatum fall in love with Kirsten Dunst after living inside a roof for 6 months, Roofman is for you, and that's a wide release. It's not a great weekend. I'd probably tell you to watch something that you're already into. Like Weapons is still in theaters. If you haven't seen that, I would definitely say go watch that. But and Smash Machine has came out already. One bad after another is the Leo movie. So not a lot of new things to watch, but if you missed some of the things because you've just been busy, you still got your options in the theater to take a look at, and you got some good ones. I would probably tell you to stay away from Tron: Ares unless you just love Tron and you want to give it another look. All right, we'll go to break with that. We'll get into a couple things for this weekend football-wise, and then we'll wrap it up. It's me and AJ for one more segment, and then we'll have a little break with Rich Eisen, and then from 3 to 6, Jeremy and Joe will be out here at East River 9, and you should come out there. Excuse me, come out here and join them from 3 to 6. But we'll be back after this.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at East River 9, here's Del Olalea.
Art chimes in and says that the Sopranos are always a good option. True. It may be a weekend for your old favorites. If you need to not watch sports for a couple hours, maybe just pick something you already like. It's not a great weekend for new stuff, unless you love Tron. All right, so I did want to get to this. We know Prime is going to have the NBA this year, and part of the process of having a sports league on your network is not just hiring the people to talk about it, but you got to have a theme song. Some of them are miserable, memorable. Maybe some of them are miserable. Some of them are memorable. Some of them are not great. Maybe the GOAT, at least as far as basketball is concerned, is John Tesh's Round Ball Rock. NBC has that one. They're bringing that back. Maybe you love, I don't think a lot of people think it's the SEC on CBS college football song, but it was just the CBS college football song long before then, particularly if you remember college football in the 90s on CBS. But Prime has a song now. It's a little snippet. Somebody grabbed it from somewhere. But here is the Prime, at least the song you'll hear when Prime starts their NBA coverage. And not that far away. We're only a couple weeks away from the season beginning. Here it is. All right, AJ. For people who don't know, and why would you, Common is behind it. He helped compose it. Now that you've heard it, AJ, you've heard a lot of them. We've all watched ESPN come back from a break, and their music, of course, will be reminded of NBC's. What do you think? And TNT, of course, also. No longer with us as far as NBA coverage, but we know the NBA on TNT theme song. What do we think? A victory.
It's not bad. I mean, it's kind of something I would like expect from Amazon, because I mean, especially with the Thursday Night Football thing, it's not bad though. I would say like on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say like 7.5, 8.
Yes, I would put it in the range of fine. I'm not offended by it. I'm not excited. I don't know if I will associate it with NBA basketball unless Prime becomes a bigger part of it. Maybe they take over at some point. Who knows? It's fine. I mean, it's whatever. It's a theme song. It ain't hitting like some other ones, but right. it is what it is. It does sound like something Common would be behind. That's what, now that I think about it. I saw Common was attached to it. It does sound like that. It sounds like something. What's his name? I forgot. He's the band leader on the Fallon show. What's his name? God, I forgot his name.
The one with the Afro? Well,
yeah, I forgot.
I know you're talking about that.
I forgot. It sounds like something they play coming back from break with the live band. It's whatever. I mean, we'll just get to the games. And the quality of the broadcast certainly will determine how successful Prime is. But there it is. Prime has a theme song. And kind of forget how many places we're going to have to go to watch basketball this year. There are already a lot when you include ESPN and TNT, but now you throw in NBC and Prime, and Peacock, which will be part of the NBC arm. I'm sure it'll be closed off to some people, but there'll be those games, those primetime games. And I think are we at every night? Someone's going to have a primetime game.
I think so.
I think at this point, the NBA is just going to flood us with games. So even if you don't have it, League Pass, you're going to be able to watch an NBA game out of market. And, of course, in this town, the Rockets will be a giant focus. And they're going to be a team that's going to be on those primetime games quite a bit. So we're going to get a lot of Rocket basketball in primetime scenarios. As far, well, I would probably say it better, national TV scenarios, because because they're one of the teams expected. We did this. We talked about it yesterday. One of the teams expected to be really, really good. We talked about it yesterday with the NBA GMs and their survey. Amen Thompson's one of the guys they look at as a potential, maybe the best two-way player in a couple of years. GMs are asked about his potential. Kevin Durant has been voted the guy or the acquisition that'll be the most impactful this offseason. Reed Sheppard was one of those guys last year who GMs thought was going to be the best player in 5 years in his draft class. So he'll have a chance to prove that. Didn't get many opportunities last year. But as a guy who will be the starter for the Rockets, if we go by what the preseason has shown us, now that Fred VanVleet's likely out for the year, now it's his time. So they lost, at this point, three starters from last year's team. Now you replace one of them with Kevin Durant. That's an upgrade. But it's going to be. I wonder if to start that chemistry will be where it was last year as they kind of work with each other. Talented, definitely. If you just go by ceiling, this starting five is one that has a larger ceiling or higher ceiling than last year's starting five. When you throw in Reed Sheppard and Kevin Durant, and certainly Amen wasn't a starter to begin the year. So a lot of changes, but I don't think we should be concerned about how good they'll be as far as the regular season. We'll see as they play together how good they'll be in the postseason, which is what they built this team to be. They built this team to be not just a contender this year. Certainly the Kevin Durant thing fast-forwarded their championship window, but 3 years down the line, 4 years down the line, how many times will we be entering a season talking about the Rockets as a team who is a top two contender in the West? They set themselves up pretty well. Okay, we have a couple more minutes to go. Before we go, I'm not sorry. I got caught up with Art sending me something. I'm not reading that. You almost got me, Art. Congratulations, but I'm going to avoid that. All right. We certainly touched on the NFL weekend and the college football weekend. I gotta hope Seattle wins, right? That's the big thing for this weekend. With the Texans not playing, I don't have much faith in the Cardinals beating the Colts. That feels like the Colts will be 5-1. But if the rooting guy, certainly, let's hope that the Jags get beat by the Seahawks. And you want more compression in the AFC. You just need more teams to drop games. You got off to a tough start at 2-3, but if you start to look at the schedule, Cleveland's not going to do you any favors playing Pittsburgh, and maybe that's that division's only a one-team division as far as making the playoffs. The Chargers go to Miami. Miami's bad. Chargers are 3-2. They're in the midst of a two-game losing streak. You love for Miami to beat the Chargers to keep them from getting the four wins. If we're talking rooting interests, Seattle, you want Miami to win, and Detroit to beat the Chiefs. Those are a couple. And certainly Green Bay to beat the Joe Flacco-led Cincinnati Bengals. So if that works out for you, the wild card race, as we start to look at playoff paths, I know it's very early, but it doesn't hurt to start hoping for some of these teams to lose. And, of course, if New England can go into New Orleans and lay an egg, that'd help too. You'd like a lot of teams to be at 3-3 or worse as you have a bye week. All right, won't go to break. I'll say goodbye. Thanks to AJ for helping me out throughout and really helping John and Lance out too. Appreciate you, AJ. We will be back on Monday. We'll talk about the NFL weekend, the college football weekend. We'll see where the Texans land if they got any favors from some of the NFC teams that are playing AFC teams and some of the really bad AFC teams playing some of the wild card potential AFC teams. We are done here at East River 9, at least I am. Jeremy and Joe will be here at 3 to take you to 6. But since we're done for the day, AJ, what does that mean?
Hey, give me some of that salchicha.
people have been calling for that all morning, and he got it. There it is. Lance Zierlein, the star of the week, simply because of that. All right, I'm done. I'll talk to you on Monday. Have a good weekend.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.